better listen very carefully.
A good martial artist does not become tense, but ready.
Essentially, at this point, the fight is over.
So you pretty much flow with the goal.
Who is worthy to be trusted with the secret to limitless power?
I'm ready.
Question time. The boys respond.
Hey, just quickly, this is Jules' first time officially mic'd up and earphoned up on the show. Welcome, Jules. Please proceed.
Hello, everybody. Alrighty. First question comes from the Johnny Jagger. I'm new to BJJ at 36 years old, and I've had issues with my trap and neck muscles locking up to the point of not being able to look over my shoulders for 2 to 3 days after. Is this a weak muscle issue or a flexibility issue? I really want to take care of my back, but I'm not sure where to start.
Wow. Good question, Johnny Jagger.
Okay, well, depending on the situation, we obviously it's very general advice, so none of this is medical advice, but just putting it out there. Johnny, possibly something you want to consider if your traps and your neck are getting kind of too tight and locked up, look to open up through chest and through your thoracic spine. Often this can occur because your head is too far forward. Obviously, your neck may need some strengthening work, but I'm going to say one of the best places you can start to take the pressure off your neck and off your traps is to stretch your chest, open up through your thoracic spine, and actually get your head back. Typical thing in jiu-jitsu is to be hunched and forward. Once you've been able to kind of restore balance, then I would say the next step is looking at strengthening. Thoughts?
I would add into that strengthening the muscles of the back, but focusing. So think of all your pulling work, rows, that kind of thing, but really making sure to keep the shoulder blades down. Yeah, and so you're actually starting to build more of the lower trap. Something that people get confused with the trap, we tend to think of it just as like this muscle that's up high on the shoulders, but actually it comes all the way down very low on the back, and it's between the shoulder blades down to the lower back. Most of us neglect the lower portion, and we build the upper portion a lot. So perfect coupling would be some really sort of considered scaps depressed pulling work coupled with pec stretching and thoracic opening, and should fix it.
Away you go.
Yep.
Second one comes from Alex Rendon 5484. How can you determine you're not learning anything as a blue belt? Respectively, looking back when I was a blue belt, I didn't know what I didn't know.
Okay. Well,
how can you determine you're not learning anything?
Okay. Provided I'm understanding the question right, Alex. Honestly, you have to choose. And we were kind of talking about this previously. You got to pick something, and that is your project. That would be the thing. You can't just leave it in the hands of your instructor. Once you're at blue belt, it's not survival anymore. It's like, okay, what am I working on? You have to take some initiative and ownership and agency in your jiu-jitsu. If you just rely on your instructor, and maybe your instructor is a bit haphazard in the way they deliver, you might just be touching on things and never go in depth. I think it's really good for you to pick a guard, a pass, a submission, a position, and just come to understand it as well as you can. And that way, based off the feedback you get from your coach and your training partners, you will know if you're being more successful. But you've got to stick to a thing. Otherwise, if you have too many variables, you can't work out what's working and what's not working in the experiment. Limit the inputs and you'll be able to measure the outputs more accurately.
Yeah, solid. There might also be, like, I'm thinking something that might be happening there is that your expectation of your jiu-jitsu changes at blue belt. Think about when you're a white belt, you're oblivious to everything except for when you beat someone.
Yeah.
Like, you might get swept by someone like 15 times and tap on fight, but then you tap them in the last like 30. You tap and you're like, I just fucking tapped the blue belt. Oh my God. Right. Like you just, cause you don't even really, a lot of the time you don't know what a sweep is. Like you just, it's so new to you. Whereas you become a blue belt, you become more aware of things. You start to place a little bit more expectation on yourself. Potentially you are getting better, but you now just placing more expectation means that you're not noticing it.
Yeah.
So you're looking at yourself through a different lens. So in that way, yeah, if you don't have a coach that has an eye on you, it's a tough one. However, if you got training partners or a coach that do have half an idea and you can ask them, man, do you see me making some key mistakes? Or like, and they'll tell you, like, if you're like, no, dude, like, you're doing really good. Or yes, you keep screwing it up with this.
Feedback.
That's right.
For sure. Get feedback.
Next question is from Devin DeCosta.
Devin.
In the warm-up for BJJ video, you mentioned you're not a fan of typical BJJ class warm-ups. I can't find any episodes discussing why, though. Could you elaborate, please?
That's a good episode.
It's a short ep. Like I'm saying, this is a short ep right now, so we can't go too deep. Look, there's a very general nature of BJJ warm-ups, depending on different classes or different schools that you may have trained at. The classic moves like the jumping jacks, the running in a circle.
Skip with this one.
Yeah, the alternating. Like this is – I did that bullshit when I did taekwondo. It's just like a generic martial arts thing. Now, there is also relevant things that you do like learning how to shrimp, shoulder roll, you know, break falling. These are all relevant skills for sure. But once you've learnt the skill, it may not actually be relevant to what you're doing in that class. So running around and doing star jumps and stuff, and then the next minute you're like, okay, we're doing De La Hiva Guard. It has nothing to do with what you're training. So in that way, we should definitely do a longer ep on that. I would say the warm-ups are particularly generic, but the skills you train in jiu-jitsu are very specific. Therefore, having a warm-up that is tailored to the activity would be better.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Jiu-jitsu warm-ups are stuck in the 90s.
Yeah.
The technique has very much evolved, but the warm-ups have stayed for three decades in the past. So it's just a case of, yeah, they're non-specific. They're very general. I'm sure they get you warm, but they don't do much else. Generally speaking, there's exceptions out there.
For sure.
JT, this question is for you. It says, from Mike Neal, good luck on your road to official Strongman Games. What are your current PBs?
Oh, look out.
Juicy.
Hey, Mike. Man, what can I say? Thank you. Yeah, it's going all right. I think it's maybe a little bit slower than I would want, but it's the game.
That's JT.
I'm impatient. So at the moment, Farmer's Walk, I did 123 per hand yesterday for 15 meters. Punched that out in about 12 seconds, which is reasonably quick over that distance. Yoke carry, 310 kilos, but that was really slow. Max stone at the moment is 140 kilos to 1.3. Deadlift is about 220 for four reps, but that's with no straps. It might be different. Single arm dumbbell, 60 kilos, no bent knees, and log press.
No bent knees.
What you'll see a lot in strongman is they do like
you can't jerk
it's kind of a jerk.
Right.
They're like, oh, it's a press. It's not a fucking press.
So it's a push press.
It's a push press. It's a jerk or a push press, but
yeah, right.
They're hefting big weight. Right now there's a guy, the Australian champ, does 75 kilos for seven reps.
Oof.
Crazy. And log right now is 110 kilos for a bit of a push press.
Nice, bro.
But anyway, we'll see how it goes. I'll keep you in the loop, but I am 100% natty. Oh, yeah.
Disappointed that old mate didn't want to ask me about my strongman journey, but whatever. Next question.
Too busy firing shots. Pew, pew, pew.
Last one.
This one's from Archie Slap. It's a question you already replied to, Joey. She asked, should I be looking for a gym with smaller people / more women to roll with? You replied, that's entirely up to you.
Yes. Thanks for the question. Archie Slap is very... communicates with us a lot through the gram. This is in regards to the comment about the not getting a lot of difference. Benefit yet when people are 30 kilos or more heavier. So I think my response to her was, I'm never going to like tell you what you should do on your journey, right? We're just going to discuss this thing and you guys glean what you want from it. However, no, I don't think that you should go and find a new academy. I think that what we said there was really looking at the sort of the objective nature of, hey, what's going to be the best for you to be in a learning environment? And having training partners that where there is a 30 kilo or more weight difference, that's probably not the best for that.
Yep.
But there might be a bunch of other things in that environment that make it really great for you. You might love your coach. You might love your training partners. You might actually be getting really good at dealing with people that are different sizes. And in that way, that's an awesome place to train at. It's very hard to have everything in the one space.
Yeah. And look, let's just quickly go to the other end of the spectrum, which we did not address, which needs to be addressed, which is a good friend of ours, big human, is easily 30 or 50 kilos heavier than most people. That's just the nature of the game.
Yeah.
And I think in that discussion, that person had felt maybe discriminated against because he was like, dude, I'm never going to.
No one's going to train with me now.
That means I got no training partners. And it's like, sure, like...
Good point.
It's a good point. But I guess the reason why we had focused on the perspective of the smaller person is when you are a huge human or you're just a thick human, I'm pretty heavy for my size, you're going to encounter less injuries and less problems than the smaller person. Like gravity is really on your side. you will experience less suffering in that way. You might struggle to find training partners, but with a little person, it's like, oh my God, is this going to turn into a surgery? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when you're
the There's more on the line for the smaller person.
That's right. When you're the plus of the 100 kilos, it, even though it can feel like you're getting discriminated against because people are ducking you, you're safer. And yeah. I think that was the context of the conversation, injury minimization piece.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that is a consideration, right? For the larger person, it's like, hey, you need to know that you are coming in with some, of course, some sort of disadvantage here, but you're also coming in with some kind of considerable advantage. And to our friend, I don't believe that that's anything he's not aware of.
Of course.
Right? But for some people, they might be a bit oblivious to that. So, you know, that is something that can be taken away from that comment.
For sure. That's it.
That's it. Question time. Thanks, fam. Answered. Send through the shit. YouTube, Instagram, whatever. We'll feature it on the show if it's a good one.
For sure.